Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
Well, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed suit over the discharge of an employee who refused to comply with the Michigan Funeral Home's sex-specific dress code. It requires employees to dress in a manner that's sensitive to grieving family members and friends. Well, the EEOC attempted to force the business to allow a biologically male employee to wear a female uniform while interacting with the public. Well, it's gone to court. And here to tell us the story from its beginning to where it stands today is my guest, who is Kate Anderson. She serves as third chair in the case that's going to be heard on October 8th. She is counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you so much for joining us, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's begin at the beginning of this case. We've talked about it here on the program before, but I want to make sure our listeners know its beginning and where we stand now.
Yeah, so this case really is about whether Americans can rely on the law as it's written rather than what unelected officials want it to say. And what happened here was we had a business, Harris Funeral Home. They've been in business for over 100 years, serving grieving families in the greater Detroit area. They had a funeral director who worked for them, a male funeral director, who had worked for them for about 6 years when he came to the owner and told the owner that he no longer planned to comply with the dress code, a dress code that was in place to help the grieving families. The owners thought about that. He took some time to think about it, thought about the impact it would have on both this employee, other employees, as well as the families that they serve, and concluded that he really needed this employee to follow the male dress code. They ended up parting ways, and this employee filed a complaint. And then, as you described, the EEOC took this over and pushed this to try to make a change in the law to add gender identity to the understanding of sex.
Really interesting. Now, this employee, I think it's important to point out, had agreed at the time of his employment, this is the dress code standard. He had agreed to that standard, but then some time later, when he decided he wanted to present as a female, decided he was no longer willing to comply with the standard he had agreed to at the time of his employment.
Yes, and he had followed that dress code for 6 years as well.
Now, the law says that uses the word sex as opposed to gender identity, and how that word or phrase is being applied really is at the heart of all of this. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit ruled in this case that the federal government can force Rost and his business to allow a male funeral director who identifies as female to violate the business's professional dress code, a code that in accord with industry standards and federal law by dressing as a woman when ministering to grieving families. Now, why is it important whether or not the word sex is defined or one's gender identity in these kinds of cases? And what are some of the broader implications that I think are important to emphasize as well?
Absolutely. So the question before the court is whether sex, that term in federal employment law, is going to mean sex, biological sex, which is what it's meant since the laws were passed in 1964, or if that's going to be now gender identity. And the consequences of that are significant, particularly for women. Sex discrimination law that has developed under this employment statute has been about promoting women's ability to be in the workforce, to be treated equally in the workforce. And it prevents employers from treating men and women differently, from favoring men in particular. And so if you start changing this to be gender identity, that breaks that down. And we've seen that happen in places where gender identity has been added or read into the law. For example, we're seeing it with women's athletics come up quite a bit now. There are cases in Connecticut where high school athletes in the track, they're losing competitions to boys who are presenting as girls and then competing with the girls. So two boys took 15 spots that were held at the state level by girls previously in track. We're also seeing it in the privacy context. For example, in Anchorage, Alaska, There is a women's shelter that provides overnight places for women to sleep who have been sex trafficked, who have been raped, who have been victims of domestic violence. And Anchorage tried to use gender identity to force that shelter to admit a biological man who presented as a woman and wanted to sleep in that shelter, which would have put him just feet away from women who have experienced trauma. So those are the kinds of things we're seeing happen, and those are the kinds of things that will continue to happen and happen on a broader scale if we make that kind of a change in the law.
Yeah, absolutely. I was an athlete in university. I earned a scholarship. If I had to compete against males as a high schooler, I probably would not have had that opportunity. So it's not just a matter of winning a singular race or losing to a biological male. It has much broader implications for the future of women in athletics, for their eligibility for scholarships and so on. So this is it's an important issue that must be resolved. And it's Congress who defines the words that are used in employment statute, not judges. In this case, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit and other courts. Now, where does it stand now? Is the Supreme Court prepared to take this case on?
Yes, the Supreme Court has taken this case, and oral argument before the court will be on October 8th.
One of the things that's fascinating to me is the level of support in briefs that have been filed in favor of this funeral home, recognizing the broad implications. 48 members of Congress have filed a brief in this case. 15 states agreed, urging the court in their brief to leave to Congress and to the political process any decision to make a different policy choice based on the words that are being used. So it's had pretty broad support in terms of briefs that have been filed in favor of your client.
Absolutely. And we've seen people who we don't necessarily see often mm-hmm. weigh in on these issues. For example, the Women's Liberation Front weighed in on this with a brief talking about the very issues we have, how women in athletics and in many areas of life will be negatively impacted by this decision.
One of the statements they make in their report, their brief, is that if a matter of law, anyone can be a woman, then no one is a woman, and sex-based protections in the law have no meaning whatsoever. And then they went on to talk about the ruling. Are you optimistic moving forward that this is going to be a successful effort, not only to preserve the rights of this funeral home in terms of its employees, but the broader implications for Title IX and Title VII and women who have been protected by law from unfair advantage that might be given to those of the other biological sex?
We are optimistic in this case because it's a pretty simple, definite question. Does sex mean biology, as it has for the last 50-some years, or does sex mean gender identity? And we think that the textual reading of the statute is very clear and that the court should recognize the public understanding of sex that has been in place for so long. And as long as that stays intact, the protections for women and for others under the statute will also stay intact.
How on earth did the U.S. District Court for the 6th District, how did they get it so wrong? That's a loaded question.
They did try to rewrite the statute. They've read into it gender identity, which is exactly what the EEOC initially pushed, and the government has since changed position. It's now the ACLU pushing this position, but unfortunately the Sixth Circuit agreed that sex could mean gender identity when that's not the way the statute has ever been interpreted by the Supreme Court, certainly. So we're quite hopeful that the Supreme Court will reverse that.
Well, let me just say how much I appreciate the work of Alliance Defending Freedom. I am a personal donor to the work that you do, and I would encourage other listeners to do the same. In fact, you can find out more at our website, ChristianOutlook.com, to learn more about their work and how we can support their efforts on our behalf. I appreciate so much your taking the time to talk with us. I know that you're serving as the third chair for this case that's coming up very shortly. So your time is precious, and I appreciate that you gave some of it to us today.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. Again, ChristianOutlook.com if you'd like more information about ADF or Alliance Defending Freedom. They do great work, great organization.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.